I'm Frank Vaughn. It's October 11th, 2024, and I hope you were up all night last night looking at those northern lights, because you may not see a display like that again for another dozen years or more. As for those of us who were up, we're all just recovering. I want to talk about the BC election today. I'm just going to dive right into it. Did Rustad make up the story that he watched someone die on the way to the debate? Neither the VPD nor the BCEHS could confirm someone died of an overdose Tuesday. This is how desperate they are. This is the talking point that the left-supporting media and the NDP have come up with, saying that Rustad lied about seeing someone overdose and die doesn't negate the fact that there are thousands of people littering BC streets, parks, and sidewalks overdosing on a daily basis. Maybe not thousands, but they're overdosing on a daily basis, a part of that group. They're everywhere. You could see them. You're tripping over them. They're smoking their glass pipes out front of McDonald's. They're on your public transit. They are threatening your existence through their addictions. And this is the talking point they came up with because they're on such weak ground. This reminds me of another thing that I noticed in reviewing some of the footage of the debate, is that it seems like all leftists right now have been coached and instructed to look at anybody that's conservative on a debate stage and just have a permanent incredulous look on their face and shake their heads and act like juvenile delinquents. And I think it's because it's all they've got. They're thoroughly discredited. The NDP, who would dare criticize Rustad for maybe getting it wrong about a specific overdose death, are the very same people who are trying to claim that Rustad and the conservatives want to arm criminals with automatic weapons and military-grade assault weapons on the streets, when what Rustad is specifically talking about are laws and regulations that only target the most vetted community in Canada, which is Canadian gun owners, some 3 million of us who have no criminal records, who have no history of violence in the background, who are regulated and obey some of the most intense screening laws anywhere in the world. That's the only people, the lawful people, that are targeted by the legislation that Rustad does not want to enforce. It doesn't do anything for the waves of criminals who have taken over your street. It doesn't do anything for the addictions and the robberies and the stabbings and the rampant problem of crime, which soft-on-crime policies and treating criminals like they're poor victims, their socioeconomic status and how they've grown up. And we have to take that into consideration when they shoot people and when they stab people to death and when they rob them, these poor, innocent people. We need daddy back in the room. These people don't need understanding. They need a spanking and they need to be put in the corner. They need to be taken care of. Tough love, not empathetic, beautiful love, but the kind of love that actually stops bad behavior. That's what's missing in the world right now. Moving on, we have David Moskrop, my favorite left-wing talking head. For all the right-wing screaming about bodily autonomy and Nuremberg 2.0, a whole lot of them seem to support involuntary drug treatment. The Nuremberg 2.0 thing is also a really funny talking point because the medical experiment has been thoroughly discredited. It wasn't safe. It wasn't effective. Several of the products that were offered on the market have been removed from the market. And the vast majority of Canadians are no longer buying in to the continued hype by the pharmaceutical community and those who are completely broken because of what we just went through, the people who will never take their masks off again because it's not only become part of their identity, it's become fundamental to what they project onto the world, that their egos are dependent upon it. That's number one problem. Dismissing the very real issues surrounding the medical experiment is heartless from people who claim they are the pinnacles of empathy. There's also this idea of bodily autonomy. They are the ones that didn't care. They are the ones that wanted to take it away from you. And anywhere the NDP was not in power, the NDP party advocated for more thoroughgoing, forceful measures whether it was Ontario, whether it was Saskatchewan. The left wanted more. They wanted more mandates. They wanted door-to-door. They wanted all this stuff. And in retrospect, it was all a terrible idea. It didn't work. It wasn't safe. It wasn't effective. Now, my response to this was an ineffective and dangerous medical experiment versus treating addicts already on the verge of death, terrorizing people as they just try to live their lives. Which do you think poses a more justifiable infringement on charter rights? You people opened this door. And this door was already open because the charter is subject to reasonable discretion, which is basically saying that it is subject, your rights can be revoked by any party in power that can get the support of the courts, which tend to align with the leftist parties that have been running this country into the ground for the last decade. It's quite simple. The addicts are terrorizing people. They're not victims. They make a choice to put themselves and their addictions first every single day. They commit crimes. They commit robberies. They trespass. They squat. They defecate in the streets. And they overdose and die by the hundreds and thousands in this country every single year. And you want to treat them like victims? You want to treat them as if they don't have any autonomy? Listen to me, and listen to me very carefully. The chief and principal concern of any leadership suitable to the descriptor should be that the lawful, healthy people who are trying to go about their business on their own or with their little kids can do so in safety. If that means you take an already half-dead walking corpse, not even walking, bent over like this, like not even able to move, or just passed out in the street, you take them off the street and you put them in a clean facility. Doesn't have to be luxurious. Doesn't have to have separate bedrooms for everybody. They're already living on the street. They're already out in the elements. They're already living like animals. If you give them a little better of a living facility and you force them to dry out, that is much more humane. And it's better for the person who just wants to go about their life. You'll have to forgive the interruption. I live with two gnome-like creatures that think it's really funny to invade Daddy's office when he's filming, also known as my children. Anyway, I think I don't need to belabor this point anymore. These guys got it all backwards. They're worried about rights in the wrong places when they should be concerned about rights for those people who are doing everything right, whether it's trying to take lawful gun owners' guns, whether it's trying to protect criminals while penalizing the innocent as they just try to go about their business. The left is completely out of center field. They also like to pretend that they have the moral high ground. But one of the first things they do, they're always screaming about discrimination. They're always screaming about the targeting of people and bullying and all this other stuff. But I don't know if you've noticed, they always go low in every conceivable way possible. And here's just one example of it. A person says, David Ebby seems tired. We need young and energetic leadership that John Rustad offers. Enough of Sleepy Dave. This account is a person who would consider themselves to be above all of the insults and invective. But the first thing they do is they pick a picture of John Rustad looking tired, looking pale. And the implication is one of physical insult. They can't even obey their own rules. Why is it they think they should dictate the rules for everybody else? Now, another thing, and I'm not sure if I mentioned this already, but something the left has been doing consistently, whether it was Kamala Harris when she debated Donald Trump or whether it was David Ebby when he debated John Rustad, is they all seem to just engage in this juvenile behavior where they just look askance at the person and look horrified, and they're trying to take advantage of you as a viewer. They're trying to appeal to you on a superficial, emotive level so that you don't analyze the facts. I have one question for a BC voter. Is life better after this reign of the NDP? Are the streets safer Is there more money in your pocket? Is British Columbia heading in a good direction? I noticed that Mr. Eby was campaigning with South Asian media. Are we campaigning to British Columbians? Are we worried about Canadian voters anymore? Or are we just appealing to future immigrants? Which brings me to another problem, and that is one of mass immigration. And I've recently had an exchange with an individual on Twitter who is very loud in his opposition to mass immigration, but he has not replicated. He has not made children. And this is one of the problems that I have. Canada is, as I've said before, in the midst of a demographic crisis. People are not having children. Part of that is you're taught right from high school that children are a net economic negative, that they are an imposition on your life. And as far as home economics goes, I'm not sure it serves to prepare you for family as it does to turn you off from the idea of family. The first myth is that children are expensive. They're not. They're only as expensive as you make them. The second myth is that they will take away from your life. They might impact a very selfish, narcissistic lifestyle in a negative way. And if you're a selfish, narcissistic person who doesn't really have a heart, maybe you should be exempt from this too. Maybe you shouldn't have children. But for everybody else who has a heart, who is thinking about the future and is worried that you can't afford it, is worried about the job you're going to do, listen. People in far worse circumstances than we find ourselves today have chosen to replicate, have chosen to have kids, and you are the heirs to that decision. You live, you exist. The world we created exists because people decided to have children. In the midst of the Black Death, people decided to have children. In the midst of World War, people decided to keep going because life is worth living. But that's not the only thing I want to talk about here. The message that I think politicians are loath to give to the public, which is why they're trying to plug the demographic gap with immigration, which they're completely mismanaging. If you want to plug gaps in the workforce, you can do that. You can do that a number of ways. But when you plug those gaps with people who then use their own anchor to bring in dependent after dependent after dependent who qualifies for all the things that you've paid in for your entire life without ever having to pay a dime, you create a net drain on the entire economy. You create a net drain on your public services, which is what's happening. All these people want to talk about education. They want to talk about healthcare. They want to talk about diminishing services, yet they keep piling a half million to a million people into the country every single year who have never paid in and who are entitled to all of the benefits of the nation. From housing to service delivery, immigration is your core problem. Over-immigration, improper immigration. Underlying that problem, the root of the tree, is the demographic crisis. Now, if you want to slow immigration, you can do that. You can do that and still plug the gaps in the workforce. You have to proceed much more cautiously, and you have to proceed in a way that, dare I say, involves a degree of discrimination. Because you can't just let everybody in. You let the people in that serve your purpose. Having a national interest means that you promote that national interest, and some people are left out. And that is okay. You're allowed to do that. Especially if it preserves the lifeline and breadbasket that those people that you are letting in take advantage of. It's a win-win situation. It doesn't have to be a complete and unmitigated win, a complete and unmitigated yes to anybody who's knocking at the door. You would not let everybody into your home. You should not let everybody into your country. You should only let those people in that serve your interests and make you feel comfortable. It's your territory. It's your home. It's your nation. It's your province. You can do what you will with that. But part of the news that both governments and those who are critical of mass immigration who do not address the underlying demographic problem is if we are to preserve the national fabric, if we are to preserve the culture, if we are to slow mass immigration and, dare I say, deport those who do not belong here, there will be a period of decline. I see it as inevitable. I'm not sure how you can avoid it. Because if you slow down net migration, if you decrease the pressure on the housing market, if you decrease the pressure on the real estate market, prices will fall, houses will go vacant, and there will be a period of time where if you can manage to convince the public that having families isn't a disaster and isn't this nightmare, if you can manage to elevate the birth rate back up to sustainable levels, there's a lag. Those children take 2 decades to enter the workforce. So there's this lag period. And in that lag period, population could fall. If population falls, then some things will fall by the wayside in the economy. And what politician wants to bring that message to the people? So instead, they just keep drilling people into the country, and they kick the ball down the line and just create every single day that we do not address this, we create a worse problem. Anybody watching this has probably seen the Khalistani separatists and the Palestinian protests, and they're burning Canadian flags, and they're calling for death to Canada. It doesn't belong. And to fix the problem is going to require some difficult choices and some difficult enforcement and some unpleasant news for the Canadian public, because fixing this problem is going to involve some sacrifice. And these are just some of the ways in which I think politicians justify not directly addressing this issue at the moment. It's going to change. It's already changing. The Liberals have already pivoted on immigration. I don't think Pierre Poilievre has to talk about it, because in the next year to 2 years, things are going to change. There is no point, even for the powers that be, to carry out this destructive policy. It's electoral suicide. You can see that all around us. Look what's happening in the United States. Donald Trump is campaigning on mass deportation, and he's kicking Kamala's butt. He's kicking the Democrats' butt. Well, Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan, is going on podcasts and putting unhealthy, like the whole Dorito thing. I'm sure if you haven't seen the Dorito meme, it's just surrounding eating Doritos because Kamala bought some Doritos, and it's just this, it's this totally bizarre, tone deaf thing. Doritos are one of the worst things you can eat. I mean, they're literally killing you. It's part of the whole Make America Healthy Again thing. Like, these are not good things, but they've made it into a meme. They've made it into a caricature and a joke. These people are not going to take you to the promised land. And the public is smarter than they are. They know it, which is why Trump is winning in every credible poll, and which is why the BC Conservatives have come out of nowhere and they're about to form a government. But back to the point of the beginning of this video. Two BC natives, you are 8 days from your election, depending on how you want to score it. Early voting has already begun, so maybe this message is a little late to the game. It's a referendum. Has the left made things better for you? Has the extreme left, who lies about Rustad's positions on guns, who lies about the overdose deaths, who lies about the condition of crime, who tries to gaslight you and tries to guilt you and tries to defame you, who campaigns to people who don't even live here in order to try and win an election? Do you want more of that? Or do you want to give somebody else a turn with the ball? The choice is so clear. And after these elections, after October, after November, as we proceed forth into the future, don't just give up. Don't mark your X and forget about everything. We have a lot of work to do. Here in Saskatchewan, the frustrations with Mo are real. I've read some of them in the comments. And I understand those arguments. I really sincerely do. And a lot of people talk about Sask United or Buffalo, which I can't. I like the idea. I can't take it seriously, though, because it's all PPC people, and you can't take the PPC seriously. It's literally just a paid junket for one guy and his friends and their expense accounts. They don't do anything. They can't win anything. And people who are still associated with the PPC are very much driving Buffalo. Until that changes, I don't see it going anywhere. Sask United, on the other hand, that could go somewhere. They got legs. They got teeth. However, they don't have enough candidates running to form a government, even if you could get all the people to vote for them. And that's not to take away from the great work that's been done. After this election here in Saskatchewan, we got 4 years to put pressure on the Mo government. You got 4 years to build out that infrastructure. My advice, and I'll finish on this for this video, my advice to Nadine Wilson, was to focus efforts on a few ridings or electoral districts, to concentrate their efforts to gain those seats in several ridings or even just one riding, but to get a foothold, to get a toehold in the legislature, to be very strategic about it, and to concentrate their monetary and their physical and human resources. And instead, there's a more broad effort to compete in 22 ridings or 23 ridings. I don't think that was the right call to make. I don't think there's been enough progress made. I don't think you can keep the NDP out of office, and I don't think you can defeat the SAS party as things currently are. But if things don't go the way we want, if the Mo government doesn't lead in the way they want, you have 4 years to build that infrastructure out. And I think that's the course, because once again, I think it's important to say, things in this province are not that bad compared to other places. This is the most salvageable province in Confederation. And I think many of the things the Mo government is doing are positive, net positive, and if they are built on over the next 4 years, will put us in a very strong position. And you can still work to create that third option. There's nothing wrong with that. But if this province goes to the New Democrats, we're in trouble.